Okay, let's head on down to Southern California and talk to the bad boy in Santa Monica, EnviroReporter.com creator, the Dr. Frankenstein of our environmental, well, he may save the world if he has anything to say about it all, Michael Collins. How are you, Michael? I don't know if we can save it, but we can sure try to mitigate things so it lasts a little longer.
Well, that's the best introduction I've ever been given. And I appreciate that. You got to be a bit of a bad boy to even face subjects like this.
Isn't that the
because,
truth?
You know, it depresses people. But because of the repartee we have and the fact that we got great listeners, we sometimes get really nice things said about us. And I got just such a note from a fellow named Randy at Mattawan, New Jersey. And he wrote to us, Jeff, and it says, "Hi, Mike. I have to tell you how much we enjoy your reports weekly during your appearances. It's so refreshing to hear real data, development, and we love your sense of humor. After all, it's a depressing subject. Your spark of humor and unique delivery helps us get to the point, but not so that we're numb by the end. Instead, we're motivated to tell others about the information on Jeff's program and the radiation developments. Keep up the good work." That's why we do
this. How nice. That makes it all worthwhile, you bet.
It really, really does.
Well,
especially when you've got to tell news that, frankly, shouldn't have to even have news.
The noisy negativists don't want to hear it, and they always put you down for it. But we thank you, Randy, for taking time to write that wonderful letter to Michael. He certainly deserves it.
Oh, that just made me and Denise Dan incredibly happy and proud. And thank you, Jeff, because that's what makes it happen. I'll tell you a neat thing. Since we put up the EPA RadNet data page, we've mounted and made it easy because EPA's got monitors on 123 cities, and some of them, about half of the ones detecting beta radiation, which is the kind of radiation that we'd expect from Fukushima or reactor problems in this country, about half of those detectors are out. All of the gamma radiation detectors are on, and I know that with your next guest, he's going to have a lot of interesting stuff that also has to do with gamma radiation. Now, but I got to say, we've been tracking this now. We've made it so it's easy for people to find out what the levels of beta of radiation are in their area. And in places like San Francisco, they're normally like around 15 counts a minute. Down here in L.A., it's a lot higher, I think, probably because we have more nuke work done here and the meltdowns at the Santa Susana Field Laboratory. Ours is around 45, 50 background. Now it's gone up, certainly, since Fukushima. And, by the way, as an aside, Jeff, radiation station Simi Valley, where the Ronald Reagan library is and his resting place, today came in alpha radiation in a rare rain that swept up from the south, 20.4% over background, alpha. Now, radiation station Simi Valley, this gentleman has taken over several hundred measurements for us, and he's part of a network of people that directly measure the stuff. But by going on to this collection of radiation graphs, we've analyzed this, Jeff, and I got to tell you, we pick only the best city. Last week, the week before, we didn't talk about this last week, but the week before last week, 2 weeks ago, Bakersfield was hitting about 390, and a week
CPM?
Ago, 390 CPM beta.
Oh, my.
And today it's in its 50. Last week it got as high as 450, and today it's about 100.
Where is it sweeping through from? What's your best guess?
Well, it's hard to say what it is about Bakersfield and Fresno, which in the last week came off of a high of 450 in Fresno, which is not far from Bakersfield. I cannot figure which way the wind's blowing. That is, I believe it would be jet stream oriented.
They have to, almost like the jet blows over and down into Idaho and coated Boise, Idaho, as you know, to the extent that the EPA actually closed their station down there and trucked it away. They took it away.
Just took it away. We have a photo on our main page of that very type of station. And this is one of the most valuable things a country can have. The 123 beta stations throughout the country are maintained by volunteers. And I maintain that those people ought to be paid, because this is too important a job to have 60-some-odd beta machines out at not feeding in data. Now, you can have them feeding in data, and all of a sudden, in mid-data feed, the information stops. In Pierre, South Dakota, it was at its highest in 3 months today, at a week ago, exactly a week ago, at 870.
All right. Now, remember, in California, 100 CPM counts per minute is cause to haul out the moon suits and cordon the area off, hazmat only.
And you're coming in Pierre today, a week ago today, 870, and then the graph cuts off. So you can go look at the page and then work your way over to South Dakota and look at Pierre, and you go, what happened to the graph? Well, I don't know, but I can tell you that in Lincoln, Nebraska today, it was 300. It was 90 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It was 250 in Denver. Now, people will say, no, wait a minute.
Wow.
Higher radiation in Denver, doesn't that make sense? Because it's at higher elevation. Well, that has to do with the kind of radiation your next guest is going to talk about, but it also is gamma radiation. That's what's affected. You get more gamma radiation higher up in elevation because there's less atmosphere between you and outer space. And but that's gamma. That's not beta. So why is Denver cranking at 250 today? But I got to tell you, LA's not to be outdone. In the last 3 days, it's come in bouncing around 320. It's the city of angels, Jeff.
320.
Not good. Back east, it's starting to pick up. Hartford, Connecticut hit 115 yesterday. San Francisco, which is normally around 12 to 15, it had 3 days at 100 or above in the last week. So something's going on. Is it the sea of goo from the Fukushima triple meltdown started, what, almost two and a half years ago?
Two and a half years ago.
Is it that? Because of sea mist that's irradiated from that, or is it from new emissions from that, or is it from another source?
I don't know. That's these are very heavy readings, and I don't know that they're up in that range at all very often. This seems to be highly unusual to me. I mean, way,
well, the thing about these graphs, they're a three-month snapshot. So you can actually really take a look at what has been happening in the last 3 months. Now, the world is a different world since Fukushima, but one thing we discovered last year when we first started talking about aerosolized radiation in the air was that everything that goes up in the air will come down within a matter of weeks. It does not stay up there forever.
Uh-huh.
The fallout from the Cold War, that's up in the stratosphere that's slowly releasing it, because
right,
it was literally blasted into the stratosphere of the radiation. So radiation from Fukushima, it comes up and it goes down, but it comes up again. So we don't know, Jeff, the extent of the incineration in Japan. We know they want to be done quick with that. Their whole idea with that was get it over with. And it just astonishes me today when I, you know, you can pick up a newspaper and you see this person just came from Japan, or their big tours of this beautiful, beautiful country that is rife with radiation. But you can see we have certainly high readings in this country, and at least now there's a place you can go look at it. You know, since we last talked, Jeff, TEPCO admitted that it has 2,000 Fukushima workers exposed to high radiation doses.
Oh, and dozens of times over what they reported. Way high.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, in the last week, we've got another version of the water's going to leak into the Pacific, or the water already had, or the tanks are going to burst, or we don't know where the corium is. What I find curious is the on the live feed that goes to that you so kindly provide, that goes to TEPCO right now. You can go look, and sometimes you'll see the guys moving them around, moving around in the cranes, Jeff. And I think to myself,
those cranes are mostly remote control, by the way, the big ones.
Oh, okay.
Take some very skilled operators, but they don't have men sitting in them.
Oh, that's great.
People don't know this.
Well, that's good to know that, because it's somewhat distressing. But, you know, there's a couple other... we got a big piece coming up that we have so much heavy breaking stuff.
What's it about, Michael?
Oh, it's about the security of our plants. It's about the recently
What security?
Something like that. About the San Onofre nuclear generating station.
How are they going to stop a terrorist from renting a single-engine plane and flying it into the control room of any nuclear power plant in this country? They don't have missiles around them.
That's a very good point, because in our research, we just have come across something that you very rarely get a chance to get your hands on, which is we came across an American Society of Mechanical Engineers October 2008 report called Code for Concrete Reactor Vessels and Containment. Now, if I can get it, anybody can get it. I get this stuff.
Oh, for sure.
You got to know how to look. Mm-hmm. But if I can get it, anybody can get it.
Yep.
And in this, Jeff, it says this. You know what? These things can't take a direct hit by a passenger airliner. And who would expect them to, you know? but this is what they say. It should also be noted that current nuclear containments are not designed to resist the worst possible accident, that of a reactor vessel rupture and core melt. Such a design would be required for any metropolitan setting. And then it goes on to talk about what is envisioned is a 8 to 10 foot thick reinforced concrete shell designated to resist 10 atmospheres of pressure. This report from 2008 talks about that I've never known this, Jeff. Every single nuclear plant that you see that's got those badass concrete domes and funnels and boxes, and I mean, they look like the, you know, made by the guys who made the pyramids.
Yeah,
I mean, they're rock solid.
Godzilla would bounce off of them.
Yeah. Well, guess what? None of them will do what you think and I thought they're supposed to do, which is if you have a meltdown where these rods get so hot, you can't control the heat, they melt, they become a glob of uncontrolled fission, and it starts doing its magic that big containment thing to hold it in. Not, to put it in the youth vernacular, not. How about that? That's just one little tidbit. Yeah. And these are just things you come across, you go, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Now, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it does not like to tell the nuclear industry. It's like it's one hand shaking the other here. It's a regulatory agency in the framework of the U.S. government that doesn't work by the very nature of the fact it's supposed to promote the type of energy generation that nuclear energy provides, at the same time control it and make, you know, the industry, which is the for-profit industry subsidized with your tax dollars, make it, you know, supposedly as safe as possible. Well, to do that, it costs money. So what we find out in just this one report is that if you have a simultaneous primary reactor coolant and secondary heat transport steam systems blowdown, the containment won't hold it. Reactor core melt? Nope. Reactor vessel rupture? Forget it. Hydrogen deflagration? Hydrogen detonation? Jet? Nope. No.
Well, even a Cessna 150 packed with explosives make a big mess out of any control room.
Part of the stuff that we'll be reporting on is our initial reporting after a 911. on the terrorist target that Songs is. I mean, nuclear reactors are very, very important things, and no matter how anybody feels about them, we certainly don't want anything happening to them because the consequences are so severe. Back in 2001 for the LA Weekly, Jeff, we reported on this. We were told all sorts of stuff that had been done, and it's quite disturbing to see this many years later that some of those things don't look like they were ever done. And the current state of affairs there and what the possible solutions to this state of affairs is. But I got to tell you something. Nuclear Regulatory just came out with a study talking about we're going to estimate what will happen with the spent fuel pool. And we're going to pick one plant and we're going to do a study about what we think statistically will happen to the spent fuel pool at the Peach Bottom, Pennsylvania nuclear reactor complex on the Susquehanna River, Pennsylvania. It's a Mark One. It's the exact same kind of reactor.
Duplicate, same thing,
same piece of junk. Same thing as Fukushima.
Yeah.
But this is the amazing thing about this particular type of reactor. It has pretty solid all the way around, but the roof isn't so solid over the spent fuel pool from cutaway diagrams that are accessible on the internet from the very producer of this type of reactor, General Electric. Now, what that all means is when one takes into consideration that you have a reactor that is a Mark One, there are now Mark Twos and Mark Threes that came along, and things even more modern than that. This Mark One, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission does a study, says the chances of earthquake causing a spent fuel pool fire where the water somehow gets, the pool cracks in an earthquake and the water leaks out. The electricity is cut off to the plant, even if there's nothing wrong with the integrity of the big spent fuel pool, which has cooling nuclear rods in it about 16 to 20 feet underwater, which absorbs radiation well, and it keeps them cool because they are hot. Well, if you lose the ability to circulate that water, you're going to lose the water, and eventually these things will catch fire, and all hell breaks loose because much more goo than we've already seen with Fukushima. So get this, Jeff. This is the result of the NRC study. They say the chance of that happening via earthquake in fracking country, which causes earthquakes, the chances of, they didn't say that, they said the chances are it's a 1 in 10 million year event.
Hmm.
1 in 10 million year event. Imagine saying that about a Mark One in fracking country. It's a 1 in 10 million year event. So what we're faced with is having the ability to laugh at some of the craziness of this, but to be personally prepared about it. And part of that is being able to talk about it. So I thank you for that, Jeff.
Well, of course. Now, remember in Japan, the average worker at Fukushima Daiichi has been exposed 11 times greater to radiation than TEPCO will admit to. They're with the Walking Dead. 11 times more exposure than has been admitted so far. Now, the Mark One, we have 23 or 26 of them here in this country, is the dumbest design of any nuclear power reactor you could find and plant. It's just dumb. They've got the spent fuel rod storage, three and almost four stories up off the ground. They built this big swimming pool up way up in the air. Nuts. You see that in Fukushima, especially with the unexploded fourth reactor four's spent fuel pool. It's still up there. It's still they're still pumping water in it, and it hasn't fallen. Of course, it may at any time, But the plant itself is a testimonial to stupidity in engineering. And you know, to this day, Michael, we have not seen one world conference called by Japan, GE, Hitachi, or anybody else to summon together the brightest minds from the nuclear physics industry to try to figure out what to do here. It hasn't happened. Not one conference. Think about it. All we have are Arne Gundersen and various activist groups who are trying to bring out the truth of what happened. But there are no scientists who have been pulled together by TEPCO, which should have been the first thing they did. We don't know how to fix it. Let's get some help. Hasn't happened. Not going to happen. TEPCO doesn't care. The Japan government doesn't care. Nobody seems to care. It's not even talked about over here anymore.
It's the perfect crime.
Basically right. Yeah.
It's the perfect crime. It happens right straight out in the open, and it's considered, oh, God, that's really scary, but it is kind of far away, right? And that stuff could never get here, right? Yeah. And I never eat anything with it in it,
yeah,
right?
Right, 5 to 6 days away in the air, and everything you eat out of the Pacific now has been impacted by this. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Someone told me there's a major river not far from here, and there used to be 40, 50,000 salmon coming upstream every year to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 2.5 years after 311, maybe 5,000 salmon. That's
wow.
It. They're dying. They're dying out at sea. They're eating the fish that eat the smaller fish that eat the smaller fish that eat the algae and plankton. It's all bioaccumulative, and the salmon are clearly dying. No one's talking about that at all. No one's talking about half of the Kuroshio Current that goes up into the Gulf of Alaska and goes round and around with all of its radioactive nuclides like a toilet flush with nowhere to go. And they're still fishing away up there. No one's checking. No one's. There's no quality control. They're not monitoring anything. They don't want to. It's all about money. We are expendable. Industry? Uh-uh. That's first. Anyway, we're out of time, Michael. Anything you want to say in closing real quick?
Take care of yourself, folks, because you got to know what you're getting into at any time, and that puts down a little investment on having a detector and ways to clean your air and your food.
And ViroReporter.com is the place to go.
ViroReporter.com, and Denise Sand, my editor and lovely wife, is waving her foxy hand at us right now.
Well, I'm waving my less than foxy hand back. So. Thank you, Denise Sand. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. See you next week.
Okay. All right, time for a break, and we'll be back with Dane Wigington next with some very alarming information, as if we haven't had enough tonight.